Are you getting pretty excited about this?
Yes, I'm checking the web page daily. I'm assuming that you've got a link maybe that you can share with the with your audience. I can send that to you if you want it, but it's New Horizons, NASA. If you Google New Horizons and NASA, you'll find the mission website, and they've got daily briefings with new images coming in every day.
Well, you've been working on this since the beginning, right?
Correct. So this was conceived in, well, there'd been a movement to try and put a mission to Pluto together since the 80s when it was discovered that Pluto had an atmosphere. And that's really what's been motivating this mission, that, wow, this thing has an atmosphere. It's thought to be an escaping atmosphere. It may be something that was similar to Earth's primordial atmosphere in a state of what's called hydrodynamic escape. So from an evolution of the solar system perspective, Pluto and everything else that's out there in the Kuiper Belt is of general interest in the field of planetary science. My participation through space physics is sort of a little bit roundabout. So I'm not actually, I'm going to be thrilled to see the images of the surface and the geology, if you will. I don't know what else to call it, surface physics of Pluto. But what I'm interested in is really how Pluto's atmosphere is interacting with this solar wind, which is streaming away from our sun. And the manifestation of that interaction is basically a bow wave, or what we call a bow shock, because this is a supersonic flow that's streaming out from the sun, and when it interacts with an atmosphere, it slows the flow down and generates a shock. And so think of it as a bow wave, or the wave that you'd see in the front of a water wave in front of a boat or a ship. And so that's something that we can't see visually, but we can measure it with instruments, particle instruments. And so that's where my participation has largely been, is helping coordinate this encounter with the what we're calling the plasma instrument teams. So there's two instruments flying on the spacecraft, a low energy and a high energy plasma instrument. So when I say plasma, I mean ionized material. So it's basically the gases that you find in space.
And these are the gases that predominantly are largely streaming from the sun, although they're probably dissipated at that point, right?
Right. So they're streaming out. The stream is still supersonic. It really doesn't slow down. The density drops quite a bit as you move out. There's a magnetic field associated with this. And collectively, when it interacts with Pluto's atmosphere, it generates a huge perturbation. And that's the part that we're interested in. Measuring that perturbation will help us quantify Pluto's atmosphere. So that's really the goal, is to understand Pluto's atmosphere. And again, we're coming at it from a space physics perspective, which is sort of interesting how interdisciplinary these missions really are. They're highly interdisciplinary.
So the planet's magnetosphere, that can affect or exert some sort of force that produces that bow wave or that shield around the planet.
That's correct. So, and in fact, well, we think that Pluto does not have a magnetic field, but its atmosphere alone is enough to generate this obstacle, which produces essentially a cavity in the solar wind, where the solar wind is forced to flow around the obstacle. And then as that material, its atmosphere becomes ionized, it actually forms a very, very long tail, just like a comet would have. So you can almost envision Pluto as like a little comet streaming through space.
With its residual gases being pushed off into the extremity of the solar system then, right?
That's right. Because of the weak gravity, its atmosphere is bound, but it's weakly bound. So that means there's always going to be a component, or it's thought that there's a component which is escaping the moon, or the planet itself.
Any sort of expectations so far as how strong or how thick that atmosphere might be?
So we have data, and this started in the 80s with some stellar occultation. So when you observe Pluto and a star moves behind it, then you can see how the light is occulted. And from that profile of the light curve, you can deduce, well, yes, that the light profile actually tells you that there's something there and there is an atmosphere. So there's been a lot of modeling that's been done on the atmospheric side. And that's really all we know, is we have a small amount of data. We have models. And then you combine that with the modeling that I do from the plasma physics side of it. we're taking a guess as to what's really there, and we plan the mission based on what our best guess tells us. And so you have to pre-program, you have to upload a sequence of commands to the spacecraft well in advance to tell it exactly how to move, how to rotate. Most of the time it will be looking at Pluto with the cameras, but every now and then we'll do special maneuvers for the plasma instruments so they can really see all of space and sample that gas out there. And so it's a fairly intense, it requires a lot of pre-planning, and again, you don't know what's out there, so the best you can do is build models and design an encounter sequence that makes the most sense based on what limited information we do know. So really the excitement is going to be what is actually there. I've run many simulations. I can envision and imagine in my mind what's really there, but it'll be great to see the ground truth.
You're probably agonizing over measurements or maneuvers or whatever it is that you may be involved with here, because you have just a period of flying by of literally just a few days, and you have a 9-hour lag time to make last-minute changes, right?
That's right. So basically, the whole sequence has been uploaded to the spacecraft. It's set. There was a little bit of a scare last Sunday when they lost communication. The spacecraft went into what's called a safe mode, but it came out of that. It's fine. They understand what happened. But basically, it's set to go. There's always a concern that is there dust? Is there debris along the spacecraft flyby that obviously you can't observe? Pluto has several moons. And are there other chunks of matter sort of orbiting around? So as they get closer and closer at this point, I can't say with authority, but they've chosen a nominal flyby, which will take it to about 10 Pluto radii, so planetary radii from the planet. And we'll hope for the best.
Did your heart stop when the New Horizons went into safe mode last week?
So I didn't even know about it when it happened.
Oh,
but of course, if I if I was part of that team, that would have been a heart stopper, yes. But everything, the communications are working well. They're still receiving good images, and every day we're getting more and more detail about the surface. For a planetary scientist, it's an absolutely tremendous time. For example, they've discovered that it does in fact have a red color to it, and I think that may have been expected based on its chemistry. And so the joke now is that Mars is not the only red planet in the solar system.
It's flying by so fast, though. Is that going to be enough time for you to get the measurements that you need in order to do the estimation and the figuring as far as Pluto's atmosphere?
Right. So data will be gathered very rapidly during this encounter and stored on the spacecraft. So huge amounts of data will be collected. And then it's a waiting period because we can only trickle that data back to Earth. I don't know how many bits per second they're able to transmit, but it's slow. So, the priority will be to get some really high-resolution images back, first of all, and let's actually see what this thing looks like. The data that I'm interested in, we probably won't see until the fall. It just is going to take several months to basically download all of that data from the encounter. So what's a few days of great data is going to take us months to retrieve.
Now, are you going to be able to make comparisons to, say, data from Voyager and other probes that have already are making the transit outside the solar system?
Yeah, so the interesting thing about the New Horizons spacecraft is it's been taking data ever since, it left Earth, basically, of the solar wind. And so this is a great data set to compare with the Voyagers. So Voyagers have been sampling the solar wind in what we call the heliosphere. So there's a boundary out in space that where you basically enter interstellar space at that point. But when you're within this, what we're calling heliosphere, it's a great additional data set for looking at the gas that exists in this cavity in space, if you will. But again, we really don't know what Pluto's all about. It's a big mystery. And we're really looking forward to getting those first very high-resolution, crisp images so that we can let our imaginations rest again, I guess.
When you started out in this particular field years ago, did you have any sort of idea that you eventually would get involved in what would be the first and maybe the last probe to the only unexplored planet? Or
so I had no idea at the time. So at the time, I was very interested in moons at Jupiter. And I remember going to a conference where the PI of the mission, Alan Stern, was really arguing that now's the time we need to do this. There's so much great science. We've got a narrow window to do this. We've got the potential to use Jupiter for gravity assist. And there's a lot of technical issues with getting to Pluto. But there was a small window. The mission went forward. I happened to be looking at problems which were not... it's more of a generic problem. What happens when you put an obstacle in a flow? And in this case, I was looking at the moon Io at Jupiter and how it interacted with Jupiter itself. And so in some sense, it's a very generic problem. So when Pluto became a reality, it was easy for me to jump into that arena and start thinking about it. And I was already collaborating with several science team members at that time. And so I've served as a collaborator to the science team for the plasma instruments since conception, really, and continue to do so.
Tell me a little bit more about the instruments. I know you mentioned them before, but they're measuring particles in space?
That's right. So you can imagine this is an instrument with a somewhat narrow slit that's looking into space, and all it's doing is waiting for a particle to enter its aperture, and then it counts it. And so what you do is you count it, you determine what energy it had when it came in. Actually, it's an energy per charge that is measured. And so you generate, you know, it's not the exciting data of an image where you can see the surface, you can see the geology. It's not as exciting, but for a plasma physicist, it's very exciting. they're kind of wiggly plots. They may not mean much to most people, but the reconstruction, taking that data, that raw data, and actually converting it into something physical like density or temperature or velocity or something is somewhat of a challenge. And so there are many steps in retrieving physical parameters, physical properties in the system out of that data. Because like I said, all you're doing is you have an aperture and you're counting particles.
Particles being electrons, protons, neutrons?
That's right. So mostly what I'm talking about are ions. So these would be protons that have come from the sun. That's part of the solar wind. It's just ionized hydrogen, basically. And then Pluto's atmosphere is thought to be made up of nitrogen. So N2 molecules are streaming away from Pluto, escaping. And they also become ionized at some point. And once they become ionized, they become picked up in the solar wind flow. They have to become part of that solar wind flow. As soon as they become charged, they're incorporated in what's called the plasma environment. And so depending on the mass of the species that are coming off of Pluto, it will determine the nature of that solar wind interaction in some sense. So we think we know what it is. We think it's N2. There's been some spectroscopy done of Pluto. So all of the models are predicting N2, but there's also methane floating around on the surface. So there may be a little bit of methane as well, but primarily N2 is what the atmospheric scientists are predicting. But that's yet to be seen.
Now, is the trajectory of New Horizons expected to take it behind Pluto's wake, so to speak?
That's right. So it'll fly past on the side, and then it will go into the wake, and it will stay in the wake region. So you can think of this bow shock as sort of being a parabola or an arc, and so it'll stay in that perturbed region for, I'm guessing, a few days before it then goes back into the unperturbed solar wind flow again. So there will be a wealth of data down on what we call the tail. Again, you can think of it loosely like the tail of a comet or something. So there'll be some substantial data set from the plasma instruments in the wake.
And it sounds like, based on your earlier comments, it sounds like you're going to be doing a lot of the work later on here.
Correct.
Okay.
That's right. So I again do numerical simulation, computer simulations, and I'm collaborating with the teams that run these instruments. In fact, I was on a telecon this morning with them. They are all at Johns Hopkins APL, Applied Physics Lab in Maryland right now, awaiting this encounter. So we continue to have discussions, the what if, let's try and interpret, you know, putting our best physical interpretations on different scenarios and just trying to think the problem through as clearly as possible so that when we actually get the data, it may be a complete surprise, it may be a complete shock to us, but at least we've got a head start on really thinking through on how to interpret that result.
And to try to take one of my earlier questions one step further, how did you get into space physics to begin with?
So I was a graduate student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and it's sort of unavoidable. You in the winter, you see lots of aurora, and that's really what sort of piqued my interest. I was an undergraduate in Minnesota, and I first saw the aurora there. I came to Fairbanks as a summer researcher as an undergraduate, and of course didn't see the aurora while I was up here, but Alaska was intriguing. Came back for graduate school, and that's sort of how the whole thing got going. But again, it's underlying all of my interests, whether it's Pluto, Jupiter, Saturn, it all comes back to the aurora, understanding auroral physics. That's the motivation.